Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Rosh Chodesh Bar Cheshvan, Parashas Noach, Tavshin Pei Aleph 5781, Monday, 19 October 2020. This is Phantom Nation, named for the book of the same name, podcasting from Israel, struggling to return to normalcy, but it's a long way from it. Ordinarily, yours truly wants to opinionate on something going on here in Israel and the Jewish world. But the latest Islamic-produced atrocity in France, again, demands attention for its horror. And as a further lesson in the culture of Islam, which most certainly is relevant to life in Israel, the government in Israel has understandably tried to make a big deal of the commencement of commercial relations with the UAE, the arrival of planes from there, but yours truly finds it embarrassing. This crowing of relations with these two Muslim microstates that have made no discernible contribution to world culture, that in any case are insignificant when compared to the violence of Muslims that never stops. In Nigeria, the Muslims are mass murdering Christians just about every day, as they have for quite a while now, and once again in Paris, home of the Charlie Hebdo horror 5 years ago, and the Ypres Cachet horror, and the Bataclan horror, and a second Charlie Hebdo horror in September last month, when a believer in the correct religion, as Muslims preach, did not know that the old Charlie Hebdo office has long been sealed and inert. Charlie Hebdo continues to publish, but its location is top secret. And at the old office, two innocent people were taking a cigarette break when a man appeared, a believer appeared, with a meat cleaver, who thought they were Charlie Hebdo, and attacked them and maimed them for life. But it was this latest horror of a teacher in a suburb of Paris beheaded for discussing freedom of expression and using the Muhammad cartoons to illustrate the issue that led to his grisly murder. The West has yet to learn how to deal with this barbaric culture, and to that end, this edition is a start, I hope, of outside-the-box thinking on how to think about Islam and the correct way of dealing with this wicked religion and its teachings, such as the license to murder anyone who does not respect its savage founder. And we'll get started after the following messages from Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Aleph beChodesh Malchezvan, Parashas Noach, Tavshin Pei, Aleph 5781, Monday, 19 October 2020. This is Phantom Nation, named for the book of the same name, podcasting from Israel, crippled by the virological strike launched by the communists in China. The top story in Israel this morning was the return to learning in Haredi schools in defiance of the government, warning them not to do that. And it has not helped the government that so many of the big shots have violated the lockdown, to which the Haredim respond pretty much like those Americans who saw a video of Nancy Pelosi exempting herself from wearing a mask. The people in power expose themselves as hypocrites and dictators, and thereby turn themselves into objects of disrespect. COVID-19 has exposed the reality with the death of Soviet Russia. God bless Ronald Reagan for calling the USSR the evil empire, We have not seen the last of the evil ideology of the Jew-hating Jew, Karl Marx. If I were president of the United States, I would, as JFK made the goal of conquering the moon, his project for the 1960s, I would commission the invention of a mini, even a micro, neutron bomb that kills people more than property, and drop it on Communist Party headquarters in Beijing, and kill all the people responsible for what these barbarians have done to the world. In Israel, of course, the anti-Bibiites blame him for mismanaging the plague, but if so, every other European state has botched it as well, all now experiencing another tsunami of infection and death. Is Bibi responsible for that too? I have little faith in any government being able to manage this plague. The answer will be a vaccine, God willing, though. The AIDS virus, I understand, has never been conquered. COVID-19 is a biological plague attacking mankind, and so is Islam, a spiritual plague like communism, a totalitarian society rooted in Jew hatred. What happened in France last week, the beheading of a school teacher by a Muslim in the name of the religion of peace, is yet another example of the menace Islam poses. The middle school teacher, when teaching about freedom of expression, had used as a visual aid in the classroom a satirical cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, the opposite of peace be upon him, that apparently upset a Muslim girl in the class. Long story short, her complaint led to a true believer coming to the school, asking students to identify that teacher, and then seems to have used a knife, plunging it many times into the neck of the teacher before he could cut off his head completely. This was a kind of copycat strike, I think, reminiscent of what happened in Paris just on September 25th, when two innocent people standing in the old office of Charlie Hebdo were attacked by a believer, thinking they were part of Charlie Hebdo. This believer in the religion of peace used a meat cleaver on them and mutilated them for life. The words of French President Emmanuel Macron were stronger than ever, but still mostly hot air. And once again, making a major conceptual mistake, he said, quote, "One of our fellow citizens was assassinated today because he was teaching pupils about freedom of expression. Our compatriot was flagrantly attacked, the victim of an Islamist terrorist attack. They won't win. We will act firmly and quickly. You can count on my determination," close quote. His education minister, Jean-Michel Blanquer, was better. He tweeted, "This evening it is the Republic that is under attack." Absolutely true. This latest satanic aggression is another symptom of what the French have been denying for decades. The infiltration of their country by people bent on ending France and French culture as we have known it and replacing it with Islam, which is a religion, with the French tragically assisting them by having no religion of their own anymore to resist the conquest. Where is today's Charles Martel? The French, like other Europeans, are also not having children to match the Muslim rate with their polygamy. The French churches are empty. Not a week goes by without some church being vandalized, damaged, marked with hostile Islamic graffiti. And I point to the major conceptual mistake made by Macron and others who call this an Islamist attack when the word Islamist is in a class, I believe, with Islamophobia and homophobia and white supremacy, these nonsense expressions. It's a dishonest word because the Muslims themselves never use it. The term was invented by Western non-Muslim academics like Daniel Pipes. He may even have been the inventor, I don't know. I do think he wrote a piece for Commentary Magazine defending the use of the term Islamist that I reject because it's tendentious and an attempt to isolate the violent, barbaric terrorists from the rest of Islam, which I find intellectually untenable. The Muslims themselves do not use this term. Its purpose has been to shield Islam from being smeared across the board as a religion of terrorists. Its purpose has been to define the terrorists as outliers, extremists, unrepresentative of the average Muslim who is not a terrorist. This is true. Only a tiny percentage of Muslims engage in terror. But on the other hand, a case can be made that the nonviolent majority
smiles on the terrorists and applauds them, or just remains silent in the face of Muslim-perpetrated horror, which is functionally a form of acquiescence. You know, Arab pollsters following 9/11 found 60% of those polled in Araby believing it was the work of the Mossad, who tricked those skyjackers into doing what they did in order to get the world to hate Islam. And I think it's reasonable that the same 60% of the Arabs who think like this, if we can call it thinking, applaud terror against infidels. What I think Macron might do is the following. If I was him, I would print up millions of flyers bearing the offending cartoon, and in Arabic and French on the opposite side of the page, say something like, quote, "The people of France have the utmost respect for the right of Muslims to believe as they wish. They have every right not to like cartoons like this. But so do French people have the right to allow this kind of freedom of expression in French culture and French society. French culture tolerates making fun of another person's religion. And since France belongs to its still majority of non-Muslims, the non-Muslims have to adapt themselves to French culture. A Muslim has every right not to like cartoons of their prophet, but no right in the country of France to do anything about it. And if they cannot live in a society that tolerates this variety of freedom of expression, they are free to leave France and go live in another country. There are 56 officially Muslim states, and we French have no desire to become the 57th, close quote. The French have to tell these Muslims that they are under no obligation to adapt themselves to Islamic culture. A Muslim in France must adapt himself to French culture or leave. If I were Macron, I would then load up a fleet of helicopters with the cartoon and text and have the choppers fly over heavily populated Muslim areas in France and toss them out the open door to float down and inform the Muslims of a new France that will no longer tolerate their barbaric antediluvian savagery. The text might also add that any Muslim involved in violence against non-Muslims at any level will be deported. And even if a citizen, and even if born in France, he and his entire extended family. If this means making an exception for Muslims in French law that otherwise does not call for expulsion for citizens, so be it. And that's because Islam is a belligerent exception on the planet for its violent aggression against others who don't believe what they do.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Well, here in Israel, there was good news for Binyamin ben Ben-Sion that the MSM here downplayed, barely covered, in the same spirit as Twitter and Facebook when they chose to prevent their members from knowing of the New York Post's expose of their champion's criminal son and their champion's criminal collaboration with his criminal son. The good news for Bibi was that the Attorney General, Avichai Mandelblit, finally decided to drop two of the four charges against the prime minister that have hounded him for years now. I don't think the Jerusalem Post even mentioned it yesterday, at least twice not online. I could be wrong. These four cases have been the catalyst for the weekend fun and games protests near the prime minister's official and private residences, calling on him to resign because he is allegedly corrupt. But now half the indictments have evaporated, including the most serious, concerning the purchase of submarines from the Germans. The anti-Bibi Street Party fundmakers have lately been coming with big papier-mâché dolls, one of them a submarine, emblematic of the accusation against the allegedly corrupt Mr. Netanyahu, which in a way never made any sense because Bibi is acknowledged to be highly intelligent and not so stupid as to commit a serious crime that someday might be uncovered just for money. He has a legacy of Zionist patriotism he would not want to sully. Another of the four charges was truly idiotic, charging him with having tried to persuade a newspaper publisher to give him better coverage, to think better of his handling of the government. Since the beginning of time, politicians talk with journalists, with editors, with publishers, and as human beings, the politicians want favorable coverage. That's not a crime. What Mandelblit did was criminalize common human behavior. How dare Netanyahu try to change the mind of a newspaper publisher? As in the States, with Trump, all Bibi's enemies here, all they can do is smear his character because they have no cogent counter-policies to his. Bibi has opened civilized relations with two more Muslim micro-states, which should please the left, for whom the purpose of the State of Israel is to end the hostility to Jews, starting with our geographical neighbors, our mortal enemies. The left in Israel has made life miserable for the prime minister for years now. Why they do that, I've never fully understood. I believe for sure one component is jealousy of his talents. The enlightened here resent it that a man of not the left, the cultured left, speaks such good English. Flawless, really. He also is unlike too many career politicians in that he understands business and economics. But perhaps the biggest irritation is that Bibi has never had any illusions about the Arabs, the Muslims, the Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid types of the secular left, the post-Zionist opposition. They are, you know, a rare slice of the Jewish people in its history for not being able to accept that the hostility of the enemy is baseless, because that leads to a feeling of helplessness for such people. Paradoxically, blaming Israel for the absence of peace makes them feel better, for it implies that Israel has the power to make peace. Israel's post-religious types yearn for peace and cannot accept that there's little we can do to change the hearts and minds of the Muslims, whose religion is a form of anti-Semitism. Ergo, the over-the-top celebration of the commercial flights between the UAE and Israel this past week There's also been a report of UAE citizens who landed at Ben-Gurion Airport and visited our Temple Mount, which visit had the PLO, the Distinguished Palestinian Authority, had them in a snit. They say no believer must come to Haram al-Sharif via the occupation. This is what they call Israel. Not Israel, but the occupation. That's a faceless power, a monster for having no human face. The occupation is what they call us, which unintentionally accurately reflects Arab psychology. Calling us the occupation is another way of saying that Palestine rightly belongs to them when, like the fantasy of Trump being a Russian agent, there's no truth to this so-called Palestinian foundational belief. Nations commonly have a history rooted in some distant mythical past. Think of the England of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. We Jews hold fast to the 12 tribes gathering at the foot of Mount Sinai and being presented with a constitution to make them one nation that will unite them, versus the absence of any such founding national story among the allegedly ancient Palestinians. All they ever say is, we are the Palestinians and Palestine is our country, when there's no historical evidence of either claim. Yasser Arafat and Saeb Erekat in the year 2000 at Camp David told Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak the Jews never had any temples on Haram al-Sharif. The Israelis just say that because they want to take it away from us, the Palestinians. This is the mind of the ageless Bedouin, the seed of Ishmael, nomads who refuse to settle down and work the land. As we just read 2 days ago, that Adam is required to work the land. That's in our Constitution. They remained, by contrast, nomadic, illiterate, idolatrous, and lacking any sense of guilt or conscience about stealing other people's property. Their lifestyle was preying on innocent travelers, crossing their deserts, and raiding and counter-raiding among the different tribes, stealing whatever they could in the knowledge that their victims would someday try to take back what was taken and take some more. For some 2,000 years after the Israelites stood at Mount Sinai, there was no Islam. We were given the five books at that mountain to read and live by, and we did, as the Arabs remained for 2,000 years pagan, illiterate nomads. The Quran was their first book, and there was Arafat, and there was Erekat, claiming that the Temple Mount was theirs, and it was the Jews who were guilty of the criminal intent of wanting to take the Temple Mount away from them. We saw this behavior as well in the Age of David when the Philistines stole the Ark of the Covenant, thinking its contents were some kind of magical instrument that empowers whoever holds it in his hands. They did not understand that the two tablets were engraved with words to be read, concepts to be lived by. There was nothing magical about them. Today's Palestinians claim to be of the seed of Canaanites and the Philistines, and if so, they recapitulate the desire of that other Hamitic people to steal from the Jews. The Philistines, whom today's pseudo-Palestinians claim as their forebears, inadvertently claim a character that they might not want. The Philistines, the sages, teach by pointing out an anomaly in the text in Genesis listing the descendants of Ham, that the Philistines were the illegitimate bastard offspring of two descendants of Ham, who were, in modern lingo, wife swappers, the Kastuchim and the Patusim, engaged in this immoral behavior. And out came the Philistines, the Plishtim in Hebrew, from the Hebrew verb to invade, liflosh, and some think to invade from the island of Crete. In other words, today's Palestinians, who claim to be the indigenous nation here, in claiming descent from the Philistines, claim descent from a non-native invading people from abroad. Thank you.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
So, I see the MSM in Israel, in the matter of the Prime Minister's good news, mimicking the villains in Facebook and Twitter, who last week prevented their people from passing along the news that Joe Biden and son are toast. Twitter and Facebook did not allow their members to communicate with one another about the story in the New York Post concerning Mr. Hunter Biden and his lost laptop containing all the evidence necessary to send him to jail for the rest of his life and even perhaps share a cell with good old dad. Evidence that Hunter Biden is a criminal should not surprise. His so-called business partner, Devin Archer, is the nephew of the notorious Boston crime boss, Whitey Bulger. You got that? Hunter Biden has associated with people in the criminal underworld. Son of the vice president. Then again, wife of a president, Hillary Clinton. She's clearly a criminal. James Comey, too. Barack Obama is a traitor fit for a firing squad, and no less Hunter Biden and his father, Joe. A corrupt, stupid, dishonest, shameless plagiarist. A serious felon for his role in the Russia hoax. When in American history was there ever a passel of people at the top leading the country like these who, despite their posh pedigrees and academic degrees, are nothing but criminals? Obama, the alleged constitutional law expert. Hillary, first in her class at Wellesley College, first in her class at Yale Law School. That got her the job in the House Committee in the 1970s, working toward impeaching and removing Richard Nixon during Watergate time, from which job she was sacked for not playing by the rules, by the law. She was sacked by a liberal Democratic chairman who wanted to remove Richard Nixon from office as much as she did, only he respected the limits of the law as to what the committee could and could not do versus Hillary. This is a woman who seems to have no sense of right and wrong. Here is this valedictorian at prestigious Yale Law School who just last week or so, it was revealed, came up with the idea of smearing Trump with being a Russian agent. This was her idea. She and her cronies are, despite their pedigrees and CVs, nothing but criminal enemies of the American legal system. They're using the power of their government positions to frame the opposition leader and destroy the life of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a real American hero and patriot. This is nothing but lot kosher corruption of the rankest and most criminal kind. These public servants at the top, one would hope, should be the best and brightest in the United States, but these are nothing but lowlife. The 1960s, the lunatic 1960s, was followed by the sexually unhinged 1970s that led to the AIDS plague in the 1980s, and not accidentally, the election in 1992 of the sexual criminal King Billy the Kinky, who will be remembered in history mostly for the stain on a young woman's dress, and the story behind that of sexual perversion in the Oval Office, the holy of holies of the American people. The United States, unlike Europe's tradition of constitutional monarchy, in which the impotent monarch represents the best of the nation, versus the head of government, a politician, and not necessarily a paragon of virtue, versus the situation in the U.S. in which the president combines both roles. And in truth, there have been more, I think, outstanding people as president than otherwise, outstanding for their talents and their character. Look at the first, George Washington, who was a remarkable man, unfortunately conceived of today as a lifeless marble statue. He was one of the tallest men in the country and as strong as an ox. There's the story of him one day in retirement in his 50s, after the Revolution and before the creation of the Republic and his becoming president. He was riding over his estate at Mount Vernon, who came upon two healthy young guys making a game of trying to see who could throw an iron bar the furthest. The middle-aged general asked if he could join. He dismounted and threw the bar way beyond what they could. before getting back on his horse and riding off. He was fearless in battle, and although Thomas Jefferson and John Adams are remembered for their writing with no military records, Washington's letters also reveal a highly intelligent and wise man. And there was the almost saintly Abraham Lincoln, another giant, or President Dwight David Eisenhower, the only president I ever saw in the flesh. Actually, even before he was president, in his campaign in the fall of 1952, his cavalcade passed by my elementary school and the kids were sent out to stand by the fence on the playground and wave at another remarkable man, a good man. Fast forward to the age of King Billy and his consort, Lady Macbeth Clinton. And don't tell me American society is not sick. And one of its features has been the collapse of the liberal tradition whose patron saint was Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence, who I imagine is up there in heaven sadly shaking his head at what has become of his political spirit. Today's liberals are nothing like those in his day. They are really not liberals anymore, having been absorbed into the cancerous body of the left. And today they're just simply insane. The most important social issue for them, evidenced by their hostility to Trump and his Supreme Court nominees, is the right of a pregnant woman to destroy the budding human life that she has created. Also important to today's liberals are the rights of a young man or boy who claims to be a girl inside his male body. He has the right to compete with girls in sporting events, I believe. The liberal champion of the day, Joe Biden, has just come out in favor of that. It is a most important injustice in society in the minds of liberals that such boys are denied the right to compete with girls. This is a culture in serious decline and decay, drowning in pornography, drowning in filthy language and common speech, drowning in the corruption of its highest officials in government. The latest scoops are now implicating the head of the CIA, the current one, Gina Haspel, and the current head of the FBI, Gray, successor to Comey, all of them mixed up in the criminal culture of Obama and associates, of Hillary and associates. Whence cometh such corruption? Okay, gotta go. I do 3 other programs each week for subscribers at www.phantom-nation.com, all for the price of 1 latte grande at Starbucks. Your money is spent in Judea and Samaria among the Jews who do not think this is Palestinian territory, and helps to keep one old man with a roof over his head. Subscribe for a month, and if at the end you want to cancel, by all means do, and your subscription will be refunded in full. You can also buy my book called Phantom Nation. There's no other like it on Israel's endless war for survival. Today's music was provided by Carmina Orr and Chilik Frank, who also do the theme music. Also heard was Danielle Ahaviel, and we conclude as usual with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Bentekoa.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom! Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.